heart and soul of a nation, beckons the call. The voice of our forefathers heard in the distance.
A house divided against itself cannot stand.
To reclaim our honor.
Our soul. The challenges of a generation call out. Future generations hang in the balance. We choose liberty. This is the voice of a nation. And now, Malcolm.
Now, we all know, you and I both know, that Congress has a abysmal, really, approval rating. I mean, it's in the tank. I mean, there's not, let's put it this way. Beyond your mosquito control and your dentist performing a root canal, they have better approval ratings than Congress. You see, that's where you would, you know, level that out, maybe. So, and it goes back quite a bit here, the Gallup polls do on this thing. But since this records have been performing, I mean, at one point it was up in the 30-40% range, but it's at 20% right now, and it's dipped as low as 17%. Potentially we're headed there again. Who knows, really? I don't know. But the vast majority of we the people disapprove of the job Congress is doing. Now, that shouldn't come as a surprise to you. 75%, in fact. That's some pretty big numbers, people, of the country disapprove of the job Congress is doing. So why is that exactly? You have to break it down a little bit, start to look at where's their time? What are they spending their time on? You know, if you think of a perfect world, and sometimes some of us do a little dreaming and we think of that perfect world, and we think of things like, you know, healthcare and education and infrastructure and, you know, well, and how about more like national security? You know, that's really the biggest thing. And really, there are a lot of people who believe that really our government and Congress should be there for our defense, really our national security, not a hell of a lot more. But of course, a lot of time is spent on debating a lot of these other issues all the way down. And it really begins to get petty after a while when you see what they're really spending their time on, you know. But if we understand that if there's a quality of life mechanism here, and there's that whole ideology question too, is what do we really expect from government? Because that's a whole big conversation in itself. And that's, once you start having that conversation, you start to define what conservatism is and what being liberal is, and or socialism or whatever. You know, there are a lot of facets to that thing there. But it's how much government do you want? How much government is too much government? That's a question we've been asking forever. I mean, forever. And we can't seem to decide that as a people. And a lot of that comes down to, because a lot of Americans, they prefer other people to drive the boat, and they're happy to sit in the back seat, and they're happy to just let other people drive the country forward. And whatever that means, it means. I mean, and there are those people. There's a good percentage of people, actually, who are comfortable with that. Because they don't have the driving mechanism in themselves. They don't see themselves as, you know, really being on the leading edge, or maybe they don't have the ambition, potentially, that you and I have. That's maybe one reason. Maybe they don't trust themselves. I don't know. I don't really understand it. I mean, I always understood that it's better if we control our own lives, people. I mean, why leave that to somebody else? And now why Democrat friends can't see that, and why the left, you have to break it down to a psychology of people. Why is that? Well, I can only assume that they're comfortable with having other people control their lives. I mean, there can't be any other reason, I don't think. Is there? Do you think there is? I don't know how it can be. I mean, and what is it if there is? I'm not sure there is, friends, you know? So every time we have these elections, the same conversations come up, fixing health care. And of course, the congressional Republicans, this is something that's discussed all the time. There's a big election talking points now. And they still want to ditch Obamacare, although they failed to do that, as you know, just previously here. And by the way, as a side note, the Supreme Court just this past week here, they agreed to decide whether insurers can seek $12 billion, 12 billion people, from the feds, under a program set up by the Obamacare law aimed at encouraging them to offer medical coverage to previously uninsured Americans. Well, that was a big decision. I mean, that was just the fact that a decision that they were going to, you know, take it on to decide if this is right. And, you know, once they do that, then there's an argument there and a debate that has to be had, which comes back to, was that ever lawful to begin with? That's a side note, but I think it's an interesting one. I kind of chuckled when I seen that, quite honestly, in full disclosure to you, when I seen the Supreme Court do that. And I thought, well, at least they finally see that, you know, a lot of that stuff was unconstitutional. You just can't push that on people and deem it as, you know, I mean, people have the right to do what the hell they want to do. That was the whole idea of representative government here. And, you know, why we throw all that tea into the harbor to begin with, remember? We get tired of the England doing what they were doing, you know, back then, right? So it's the same thing here. Now, you also have Democrats talking, there's a lot of talk about them having a permanent DACA fix, right? In the plight of dreamers. And of course, this is the whole immigration conversation, which is a complete train wreck. And yet there's nothing on the schedule at all. Democrats don't even, I mean, they say that's important, and we know that it is, really. But there's other things that are more important to them, and that is winning the general election. And the demise of Donald Trump would be far more important to them than your immigration problems, people, or your health insurance, or your education, or your infrastructure, or your highways, or any other damn thing. The bridges can fall, the roads can collapse, your health care can go to hell, and anybody can come in across the border, and they're going to be just fine. As long as they can get Trump the hell out of that office, everything will be just fine, people. So that's what you got right now. That's Congress right now. You see, so that becomes an ideology problem there. That's called representative government, people, yeah? It's a joke, isn't it? And our infrastructure, you know, there are areas of this country, our infrastructure is starting to look like a third world country. In many cases, it already is a third world country, quite frankly. Now, the Democrats have been high on this list. And of course, Trump has as well. They thought, well, that'd be an area they could strike a deal. But again, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, of course, I affectionately refer to her as Polly. You remember in the Underdog cartoon, Polly, the little Polly, she was always in distress. Oh, where is my underdog? You remember that, right? That cartoon as a kid, yeah? That's Nancy Pelosi. She's Polly in that, the lost lady there, the speaker. She's always in distress, always looking for some hero to come down with a cape to save her little ass there, you know? And then you've got here, and of course, Schumer, they tried to meet with the infrastructure thing, but they were telling the president all kinds of stuff, and president threw them the hell out of the office or something like that anyways. We know how that ended, right? And then, of course, there was a measure to lower the price of prescription drugs. You know, now, these are all the things that Congress comes into power for. These are the things. You see, what they campaign on is not necessarily what they're going to sell. Very seldom does that happen, people. In fact, Trump is really an oxymoron. He doesn't fit the political elite. That's what really pisses them all off, quite frankly. See, because what he says when he ran is what he does. So that really right away makes him more than an odd duck. It's just, it's repulsive, absolutely repulsive, people, that this guy thinks he'd come in and do what he says he campaigned on. I mean, what the hell does this guy think he is? To upset the apple cart like that? Now, listen, you may or may not agree with everything Trump puts in there, but you got to admit, I mean, come on, even my Democratic friends have to admit, the guy does what he says he's going to do, and he puts it out there in the public square. And of course, nobody likes that. Nobody likes that. They're not happy with that. Well, listen, one of the freshman congressmen in this last Congress, Representative Katie Hill, she's a Democrat out of California. Well, just recently, I want to read you her quote here. She says, "We're here to have a press conference about a historical challenge to a law that protects millions of people. We got elected to Congress is the reason the House flipped to Democrats in a historic way. And instead, we're getting questions about the issues that have nothing to do with the topic that we had the press conference about." Well, she was obviously not happy, people, right? So Hill, she was scolding the reporters. And she says, you know, let's focus on what the American people sent us here for. It's not to talk about the Mueller report. It's to talk about their health care. I like that. I like that quote. I like what Katie Hill put out there. She'd had enough, and she recognized as a freshman that that's not what she ran on. Good for her. Good for her. And she put it out there to question everybody. So, friends, where does Congress actually rate? Well, if you consider again back to when Gallup started polling this thing, 1974, okay, is when Gallup, that's when they started the numbers here. The average approval rating for Congress in Gallup's polling back then, the average was about 37%. Actually, not too bad, although not terrific. I mean, you can't win an election with 37%, let's say. So nothing's fantastic unless you're up well over 50, right? And even then. But you have to go back again 10 years in Gallup's data there to find a single poll in which Congress approval rate was at 30% or above. So there's a trajectory here happening. They're becoming more and more and more and more disliked. And it's probably a good thing that the American people are catching on to their games, people. I mean, that's what I'm thinking here. The decline, people, in congressional approval is probably linked to the decline in trust of government in general. People are not happy. They don't trust government, you know. They absolutely don't. And that in part and parcel is the problem there. What I have a hard time understanding is how do we keep electing these people to high office like this? This where I started, prestigious. The prestigious United States senator or the prestigious United States congressman, right? That's prestigious, yeah? Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure it started that way, but that's kind of what we put. We've celebritized them. They're celebrators, right? They walk into the room and we all stand at attention. And actually, what's really weird is, I got to remind everybody, they actually work for you. You're the boss of these people. You're their boss. So why are you standing for them and why do you celebrate them and why do you salute these people? I think that's a real question you need to think about a moment. And maybe if I can get you to see that today, we can accomplish something together here, you know, maybe. I mean, there are a lot of issues, friends, of what's happening here. And one of the biggest things with Congress I want to point out today to you, and I want to remind you in case you didn't know here, okay, is that, you know, as of 2019 here, the U.S. House and Senate, the salary there is about $174,000. Now, they're trying to get a raise through. Again, you've heard the numbers on that. They're trying to get about another close to $5,000 or so. The Speaker of the House makes $223,500, you know. And, of course, if you're a minority leader in the House or Senate, you make $193,400. So you make a little bit more, a few more perks, if you will. And these are the salaries now. Now, you would say, wow, some people would say that's a lot of money. And potentially even our guy today I'm going to bring on in just a moment here with you will maybe say that as well. See, I don't think that's a lot of money when you consider they're living somewhere in the country and they've got to live in a second home up in D.C. They don't get a house allowance up there, by the way. So they have to have a set. And Washington, D.C. is not a cheap place, by the way. And I'm certainly not defending that they don't make much money. That's for damn sure. I mean, the representative government, you served because you wanted to serve and make a difference in the country. It wasn't to get rich. But see, there are a lot of problems within the issues of Congress. And one of them is insider trading. How are they becoming wealthy? Now, I've been following these trajectory people of their incomes. And the vast majority of Congress, I need you to understand, are multimillionaires. Multimillionaires. Now, some legitimately so. Some legitimately have businesses and they've done well. Others not so legitimate. So how's this insider trader working for them? You see, you got to begin to question that as well. But they leave Congress very successful. Back to that prestige we're talking about. You see, it's the prestige. So you've got that factor in here I want to talk to you about today. Then you've got this hush fund factor where they've got, you heard of that. That's where all the sex crimes and the public tax money's paying. So that was kind of put out there over the past couple of years. And now that's supposed to be closed down or being closed down. And we've all been trying to track that down, trying to get, you know, find out who those culprits are, who's had that. And we know some of them, but we haven't been able to get that information released. Well, of course, they make all the rules there, just like term limits. They make the rules, so you can't enforce anything new. So there's a lot in the conversation today, people, about what these issues are. And I guess I want to pose to you that I want you to think of this. You know, Congress is our legislative body. They're there to make the rules, make the laws. They're there to make it work. I mean, and when that doesn't happen, you'll find a president will begin to go to more executive orders. They'll begin to have to do their own governing because they don't have a Congress at that point. And that's typically what happens. That's historically what happens. And it happened under Obama as well, because Congress didn't work with Obama either, when it was Republican, noted, mind you, again. You know, and I know I was there, even though Republicans don't want to admit that. We all have the same problem. It's an ideology thing. We don't want to work with the other side. We don't like their framework. We don't like what they want or where they're going. You know, there's so much to this conversation today when it comes to understanding Congress. Truly there is. There's a lot of issues at stake here. But I think you got to step back a minute and ask, why do we keep electing the same people to office? And how do we expect a different result? Because by far, you know, if you are a current senator or a congressman, the chances of you getting back into office are very high. We seem to keep putting them back in. And then there's the whole conversation, why don't we have term limits? We have them for the president. Why we don't have them for Congress? That's an argument I want to have as well just ahead here. Friends, I think this is a really important conversation, and I need you to pull something from this. But more than that, we need to take action. Because if we don't get Congress settled down right, if we don't start to raise those percentages where we like the job they're doing for us, since we are the boss, we the people, I suggest we take a step back. We have a collective here, and we begin to make a movement to right the wrongs. Let's start off that idea and that trend today. I have a few ideas to share with you just ahead here.
Our global experts are brilliant writers and engaging hosts on a mission of a lifetime. You'll find the latest news and inspiration on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com.
The Out Loud perspective awaits you in life, love, politics, a healthy lifestyle, your faith, personal development, and living an out loud life on AmericaOutloud.com. Blitzer News and Entertainment Network, where you can listen 24/7 on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome on here. Captain Stu Swerk is here. He's a retired naval officer, a defense contractor, he's a columnist, a commentator here at America Out Loud. Stu had an interesting column, as all of his columns and articles are interesting. They make you think, and I like that when we can think a little bit outside of the realm of things here. So this one was entitled On Dealing with Congress Properly. I like the word properly added there. So how do we deal with Congress properly here? You know, one of the things, Stu, I can't get my arms around, and I've never understood this, even as a kid here, is the gridlock that is constant. And I've seen this, I mean, throughout my life here. Let me give you a couple of thoughts here. So the latest, I look at Pew, I look at Gallup, I look at Rasmussen as well. So I want to talk about the Rasmussen reports here. So they did some surveys. They find that 52% of likely U.S. voters feel it is better for the country if Congress works with Trump most of the time. Yet 39% disagree and say it's better if Congress opposes the president most of the time. So, and also 88% of Republicans think it's better for the country if Congress works with the president. 64% of Democrats disagree. Now, I remember when Obama was in office as well. I mean, a lot of his ideology and politics, certainly as a conservative, I was not in favor of, Stu, really and truly. And I didn't want Congress to work with him either back then, because I knew everything he was putting out there was not healthy for the country. At least I felt it wasn't. But isn't that the same thing now? If we flip that card deck around now, isn't that why the left and they don't want Congress to work with the president? The constituents who put those there, they want gridlock, don't they? Do you think?
That's just the nature of the beast, Malcolm. I think you set this up pretty well. You've got two sides of an equation. You've got a left side, you got a right side. And the country has been split. It's probably been split for most of its existence. And in fact, the founders themselves wanted to have somewhat of a gridlock government. They set up the separation of powers such that one body could not run roughshod over the other two. And what they wanted to get was consensus for moving the country forward with respect to policies, laws, legislation, what have you. And that required compromise across the aisle from left to right, and consensus was the way things move forward. So the reason why we have this low percentage of Congress being viewed by the people popular-wise is because you've got people that look at Congress from their own point of view, through their own prism, if you will. If you're a conservative and Congress isn't attacking the big government, high taxes, high regulation problem, well, then you're going to be disappointed. But by the same token, if you're a leftist or if you're a Democrat, and Congress is not moving forward in the sense of nationalized health care or this Green New Deal business or some other left-wing policy, then you're going to be disappointed too, and you'll probably say Congress is not doing a good job. So people have their own reasons for saying why Congress isn't doing well, and they're not the same reasons, actually. But the collective result is that everybody thinks Congress isn't doing very good.
That is well said. And that should give everybody a thought process here to understand what Stu is saying there. But so the collective as a whole, we know what we know and what we think, but they come from two different ideologies, which I talk about all the time, Stu, here is these different ideologies. You know, I've thought in recent days, Stu, that we really are like two countries in one. Someone said to me recently, in fact, maybe the country should split up. Maybe we should have a red America and a blue America so we can be, you know, more, boy, that would be a hell of an experiment, wouldn't it, Stu, to see who was the victor. I think we kind of know who we think would the victor be, but it would be a hell of an experiment. What do you think about
it? Well, there's certainly a lot more red territory than there is blue territory.
Seems to be.
Now, what we have is, you know, most of the counties that voted in 2016 for Trump, in fact, most of the counties in America voted for Trump, basically. And if you look at a map, electoral map and so forth, there's a lot of smallish blue areas, but those blue areas are concentrated around the big cities. I mean, the large cities on the coast, Chicago and other places are pretty much blue. And that's where the numbers came from for Hillary Clinton. So from a territory point of view, I mean, most of the U.S., from a county territory point of view, is in fact red.
Right. And that's why when you look at the country as a whole after an election, you can see that. You can see, in fact, it's always quite stunning, actually. You'll see the amount of red, and then you kind of question yourself. But as Stu's just saying, a lot of those heavy, heavy urban areas in the cities are blue. And, you know, part and parcel, part of the problem I'm seeing, I call it the gutting out of America, is our urban cities are in a lot of trouble. I mean, this is a major talk here, major conversation, Stu. I think that I think it's going to really play to the demise of many of the struggles we're going to have ahead. Is our cities are they're bad? I mean, and it's all over. It's through the entire country, and I'm starting to see a lot of these urban markets. I mean, they're not only unhealthy and homelessness and drugs ridden, crime, but they're becoming. They're just not hospitable anymore. They're not places you want to be at. Not a good trajectory for the nation, is it?
Well, it's amazing to me that topic hasn't been nationalized in general. Who runs those blue cities? They're Democrats.
That's right.
All of these large cities virtually are run by Democrats. You name a big city in the U.S. and you'll be hard pressed to come up with a true Republican conservative in the mayor's office. It's just not the way it is. So how did these cities get to be the way they are? Because of liberal policies over the decades that has resulted in the problems that you see all around. It's the way it is.
Yeah, that's it. And Stu, why do you think a lot of those cities and towns, I always, as a young boy, I remember them telling me that they used to say local politics is local and it's mostly Democratic. And which brings us back to the plight of a lot of these urban markets. They seem to go more that way. What was the feeling about that back in the day? Why was that a trend? Do you have any idea?
Well, I like to harken back to, there's a former Speaker of the House in the 80s by the name of Thomas P. Tip O'Neill. He was from the Massachusetts, Boston area. And he used to say that all politics is local. He used to repeat that phrase constantly. And I think that's pretty much accurate. I mean, you look at the reelection rates of any congressman, or congressmen in general and senators, is upwards in the 90%. The reason why we have turnovers from election cycle to election cycle is you know, there are people that do retire, and when there's a nationalized election that focuses on particular topics and whatnot, then those seats that are up for grabs are where the changes are made out. Most of the long-term servers in Congress get reelected over and over again as long as they run. The reason why there was a 2018 turnover is because there were a number of senior Republican congressmen who chose to retire. I think they retired because they thought Trump was going to fail and they were going to lose their chairmanships anyway with the next wave election, and they got out. Now, had some of those stayed, I'm not convinced that the Democrats would have taken over. Now, that was one factor. The other factor, of course, being Mueller's dilly-dally on releasing that report when he knew there was no collusion early on. So, I mean, local politics drives a lot, and people have a tendency to go with incumbents because those congressmen have certain perks that facilitate their reelection. A lot of those things include things like franking privileges. What that means is, you know, you get stuff in the mail from your congressman all the time, and that reminds people who don't pay attention to politics, hey, I got a congressman, I know what his name is. When his name comes up on the ballot next time around, I'm gonna vote for that guy because I'm getting stuff from him. I mean, there are those kinds of issues that make it easier for those incumbents to be reelected.
Well, it is. It's name recognition, a lot of it. It's just the same thing we're seeing in the presidential race right now, in fact, which is why Joe Biden quickly jumped to front runner status, because everybody knew his name. They had heard it for a lot of years with Obama Biden. So that gave him a distinct advantage. The other name that did well, because they know his name as well, because he's been in the race forever, is Bernie Sanders. His name is well regarded as well. So that's why these people, it's name recognition. It's funny how that is.
These people are viewed by a lot of folks as celebrities.
That's right.
And I think that's a misconstruing of really what they are. I mean, they're not celebrities. They're part of the political class. I like to look at them as part of the leech class, because what they're doing is leeching off the rest of us. I mean, a congressman only has two jobs, right? Mm-hmm. One is to get reelected, and the other is to collect as much money as a person can to facilitate that reelection. And that's done by collecting money from donors and from people who are the rubes out there that want to donate to that congressman. And the other money comes from people who are lobbying that particular congressman to help change regulations or make changes in tax policy to advantage whatever that company or that industry is. So, like, that's the only jobs they've got. Everything else is wide open to them. They don't have to solve problems. In fact, it doesn't bother them if they create problems by what they do, because that just gives them more stuff to talk about and more issues and actions that they can take at some point in time in the future. Whether they resolve these real prickly issues or not, it doesn't really matter, as long as they get reelected, as long as the money's coming in.
You know, I mentioned the salaries of a lot of these people up front here, there, and I had mentioned that, I mean, by any standards, Stu, I mean, that's not it's okay, but it's not like you're ultimately wealthy. I mean, your salaries are $174,000, but you've really got, if you've got a family and a home and a mortgage and cars and the usual stuff back home, wherever home is, you know, and then you're up in Washington and you've got those expenses there, I mean, that's not a salary that is going to ultimately be wealthy, with living expenses and travel expenses and two property, whether you're renting in D.C. or however you're staying up there. So what I started questioning years ago is why so many of these people are so wealthy. I mean, they're loaded. They're multimillionaires many times over. Now, some of them, as you look into it, have a legitimate reason, and they have either businesses they've started. I mean, there are some that are legit, but there are a lot of them you begin to question, why is that? And I want to talk to you about insider trading now. Tell me what you know. How much of an impact does that have? I mean, and let me, before I maybe set that up that way, but is that one of the biggest reasons you think as to why these cats are so rich and so successful?
I think there's several reasons. That's certainly one of them.
Okay.
Another one has to do with general nepotism. If you look at some of the spouses and the immediate family members of certain serving congressmen and senators, you'll find it that a lot of them are doing business with and for the government as contractors, or they're bidding on projects, or they're gaining insider access courtesy of their elected spouses on certain government run efforts around the U.S. And over time, that's where a lot of that wealth comes from. Now, the insider trading part certainly is a big deal, because you think about it, the tax code is as arcane and complex as just about anything that, on the face of the planet. I'm not exactly sure how many pages are in the tax code anymore, but we're talking thousands of pages ultimately. And every time a little tweak is made to a given provision in the tax code, it can affect in a big way financial services industry. Well, you've heard that Bernie Sanders wants to tax all stock transactions.
That's right.
Imagine the impact on people. You know, behind closed doors, the congressmen and senators talk about these things. They talk about what they're going to change in a way of tax law and so forth. And they stick these provisions sometimes in bills that are not even related to financial services or tax policy. And those provisions can mean big money based on either exemptions from taxes or taxing one's competition. Now, if a congressman knows that there's going to be a provision passed that affects a particular industry, then, gee, if it affects the industry in a good way, then that's a kind of a signal before that law is passed, that tax provision is passed, hey, I want to get in and buy some stock, because that stock is going to go up because that industry is going to take off as a result of this tax policy change. And it works the other way around too. If you're going to implement a tax on a given business or an industry, then that's going to, you know, when you tax something, you're going to get less of it, which means you're going to depress the economic development and economic growth of that particular industry. So if there's a tax that's going to be passed, then it gives you a chance to short or get out of that particular stock in that area. So that's the kind of games that people play behind closed doors. Now, in theory, it's supposed to be illegal, but how do you know? I mean, only when you see congressmen making a significant profit, and that's almost never publicly disclosed, but sometimes that does come out, then there's some public pressure that gets exerted. And occasionally there's sufficient public pressure on Congress to do something about it and to pass insider trading proscriptions to prevent that from happening. But by and large, that kind of stuff still goes on. And that is one way that congressmen and senators make money behind the scenes over and above what they get paid. I've got a problem with people saying, well, they need to get more money because, you know, it costs a lot to live in their own district, to maintain mm-hmm. a residence there and to be in D.C. and so forth. Well, that's fine. These people are part of the political class, all right? They've mm-hmm. made a choice to do that. They've made a choice to run for Congress. If they can't live within their means, sorry, that's still a decent enough salary for people to get by. No question about it. In fact, I would suspect, I don't have any idea of knowing, of course, but I would imagine that the founders would be aghast at the amount of money that is being spent on Congress salaries, because I don't think they had that in mind. They didn't have a professional political class mm-hmm. in mind. They wanted people to come and serve for a period of time and then go home and return to their businesses, their normal way of life, mm-hmm. as opposed to be congressmen and senators 365 days a year.
Sure.
I think they'd be aghast at how it's turned out.
Well, maybe, but you also have to be able to, but you also want to have the right people up there, Stu. And so you have to be able to afford to be up there. You don't want to have just people that are ultimately wealthy who serve, because back to the affordability of it. I mean, I put the shoe on the other foot, in other words, okay? So on the other foot, if you played it the way you just said, then ultimately, well, I get the too bad, so sad. I mean, I totally understand this. But, you know, back to the framers and what they envision, I'm not sure they'd be too surprised or shocked. I don't know if I agree with that, because I just think that, you know, it's a given, Stu, that my point of reference of that was that they're getting ultimately wealthy up there because a lot of the things you just spelled out and that I spelled out, insider trading, insider, the nepotism business, influence. And influence is a big word. That's the prestige that I talk about with being a senator or a congressman, is influence. That's really the big word here, is that they're getting. They're using that influence to make a lot of money. So do I feel sorry for them? Not at all. The point is they're making a lot of these deals and they're ultimately becoming multimillionaires. Do you know more than half of Congress now are multimillionaires, Stu? You know that.
Well, absolutely. But going back to, who do we want elected to Congress, okay? Do we want
real
unsuccessful people?
We
want real people, but what kind of real people? Mm-hmm. I would argue that we want real people who are successful, who have run successful businesses, who know how to manage payroll, to know how to manage people, to provide mm-hmm. leadership, have demonstrated mm-hmm. something that lends people to have some comfort that these people know what they're talking about. They know how to do things. And how are you successful in a capitalist country? Well, mm-hmm. guess what? You're going to make money, and you're going to be at the wealthy end of the spectrum if you're successful.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with rich people being in Congress.
Yeah.
I have no problem with somebody like, from an outsider like Donald Trump, who's never run for any elected office before, swooping in and becoming president of the United States, because the guy is a success in his private life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want across the board. We don't want people who get elected over and over and over. We don't got guys like Joe Biden.
Mm-hmm.
That guy has spent virtually all of his adult life in Washington, D.C. He's
right.
never run a business. He's never met a payroll. He's never had to pay taxes for a business that he ran and owned. See, he has no idea of the impact of the stuff that he spouts all the time. Same way with Bernie Sanders. I mean, these people that live in D.C. and are professional politicians are not doing us any good. We need turnover. We need to flush them down the proverbial commode, and we need to get people in there who have a willingness to tackle problems and issues, just mm-hmm. like the president is.
Right.
Let them say what they're going to do and let them pursue doing those things.
Well, here's the flip, which brings me to a big point now to talk to you about, and that is term limits. Back to your comment about flushing them now and having this turnover here that we've talked about for a long time here. So the argument I have heard back time and time and time again, every time this comes up with those who don't want term limits, is this is what they say back. They say, we already have term limits. And I look up and say, what do you mean? They're called elections. And then they'll say that really the primary case here, they're saying that they put out there about term limits is that you know, every 2 to 6 years, whatever the case may be, the constituents have an opportunity to push them out of office or leave them in office. And so that really becomes the framework for this conversation now, is term limits. And you know, there are states, people, that you may not be aware of, who tried to put term limits in play. And the Supreme Court actually ruled on this back in 1995. And I want to talk to you about that as well, as to what happened with that. But this did come up, by the way, previously. And so this conversation, but here's the thing, back to influence and what Stu just puts out there a moment ago, influence. You see, there's no question, we can all agree on all sides of the aisle that they're using their influence to some degree. Now, we can argue about the salary or what have you. And there's an interesting argument there. I almost thought, as Stu was talking, that maybe we should just give them 50,000 and cut that 174 to 50. Of course, and you would say, well, then only successful people would run and be able to do that, which is what Stu's saying, which is interesting, I think. And I agree with that philosophy as a winner. But then the other point is, does that put them in a prime spot to do more of these evil things to make the balance of money? Back to insider trader influence, nepotism, things like that. You see, it's a catch-22, people. It's really a catch-22. But term limits, the question is, how do we ever get that done? Because if Congress doesn't do it, we would need two-thirds of the states to ratify, to put something forward. This is a big undertaking. And obviously, Congress is not doing it. And so because we're asking them to put a law in there that would override what they believe, because they're using that influence and that prestige to get rich over many, many years. They're not doing what the framers envisioned, which is what Stu was saying a moment ago, get in, get out. Interesting question, friends. Ponder that just a moment.
Listen to Malcolm, the voice of a nation, on iHeartRadio or our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
We join you back here, friends, with Captain Stu Swart here. And Stu and I are just talking about term limits here before the pause here. And, you know, it is an interesting quandary, Stu, about the salary levels. Again, do we pay them too much? It depends what the philosophy is on that. We come back to that in a minute. Let me push over to talk to you about this ruling in 1995 now and term limits as a whole, because this has come up a great deal. Now, the Supreme Court ruled on this, as I stated before the pause there. In May 1995, they ruled 5-4, and that was a U.S. Term Limits, Inc. versus Thornton, and that states cannot impose term limits upon their federal representatives or senators. And this was put into play because there were states that wanted to do term limits, which I would say that's a good thing. And so that argument that I said about the next election, see, I don't think people are, they're not understanding, we the people, back to, you know, pushing them out of office, they're allowing, which I can't compute this, Stu, why we the people don't understand that influence that they build up over decades and decades of being in Congress, clearly. And if we could keep that a circular file up there where they're in and they're out. I think the thing I would have to say right up front to you, brother, is this. I mean, that would give them less chance to put their hand in the cookie jar and leave it there. And they might have a sense to get up there. And if we can all agree that a lot of their time and attention is spent on the next election, that would remove that carrot as well. And then maybe they would put some of the legislation in place because they know they have to leave office the next term. That could make a difference, Stu, don't you think?
Of course it could. We have lots of problems in that regard, and that people don't pay attention. There is a fraction of people, both on the left and the right, that are really in tune and really pay attention very closely to what Congress does and politics in general. And the rest of the people in the country, oh, we'll see something in passing on a TV in an airport, or if we got a flight somewhere, we'll watch it for 5 or 10 minutes. We might see something in the headlines, or we'll watch Fox News or one of the left wing channels, and we'll catch a few things. But people don't tend to pay attention. Okay, now the argument that term limits won't work, or it can't be done, or it's a bad idea, mm-hmm. You got to understand who are making those arguments. It's the political class themselves. It's a protection racket to defeat term limits every time it pops up. People claim from the political class, say, hey, we need experts, we need professional politicians because government's so complex, the bureaucracy's so complex, the average person can't figure it out. We need a political class. Well, that's baloney, of course. That's malarkey. That's all that is job protection activity. So, you know, the political class consists of the bureaucracy, the elected representatives and senators, but it also consists of the media too. And they all have vested interest in keeping that political class going. The only way we're going to see term limits in this country is not through state legislatures, because that's been shut off courtesy of that Supreme Court decision. Mm-hmm. The only way we're going to see it is through a constitutional amendment. And it will take concerted effort over many years to get the required number of states to get that constitutional amendment passed. It'll have to be passed through the resistance of the political class. That's the only way it's going
to
happen.
That's right. We'd have to force it on them. What is it? 2/3 of the states, I believe.
Something like that. I forget what the precise.
It's significant. It's significant. Yeah. That you'd have to have in play to be able to do that. So, and you're thinking that's the only way it's going to happen.
Well, would be. That's a good start. I think the second thing that has to happen is we need to have another constitutional amendment, mm-hmm. that requires that all laws passed by Congress and signed into law by the president are enforced equally on everybody. And that includes on serving congressmen and senators. Because a lot of times, what most people don't know is there are provisions that are written into certain laws that are passed that exempt Congress from their own laws that were passed. Now, that's absurd. You would think that all laws would apply equally to everybody, but that's not the case. So we need that provision implemented as well, too, so that the Congress has to live under the same laws that they foist on the rest of us.
And like you say, they put out to the people what they don't themselves induce on themselves, right?
Yeah, I mean the notion that
crazy.
The notion that the argument is there that hey, the term limits is the fact that there's an election every 2 years, and it's 6 years for senators is baloney, because there's incumbent protection based on franking privileges and those other things we talked about that make it almost impossible for somebody as an outsider to challenge a sitting member of Congress. It's just almost impossible. So the scale is tipped in favor of incumbents. And so that is one of the reasons why we do need term limits, for that reason alone.
The corruption is staggering. I mean, it's absolutely staggering. As I'm thinking outside of what we're talking about here, Stu, and I think about all of the perks, and I was just thinking a moment in my mind as you're speaking in there, the slush fund, for instance. And I'm thinking, how does, $17+ million get paid of taxpayer money for the sexual, indiscretions of these politicians is absolutely mind-blowing, first of all. And there's been a lot of movement to try to get that publicized, but still hasn't been publicized. Do you think that'll ever come out, Stu? Will we get that?
That is one of the most appalling topics.
I know.
Yeah, that I've ever heard. I mean, look, we're using taxpayer money.
Yeah.
To settle sexual harassment suits for some 260, I think is the number of serving congressmen and senators.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and the fact that we don't know who they are, the reason why we don't know is because it's, again, an incumbent protection racket. If the names got out and if the settlements got out, then guess what? That's ammunition for somebody to challenge that person the next time they're up for reelection. So that's the reason why it's hush money. That's the reason why it's swept under the table.
Yeah, well, they're signing NDAs, Stu. They're signing NDAs, all of them, non-disclosure agreements, so that nobody talks, So it really is a state secret, isn't it?
They're using taxpayer dollars, though, Malcolm. That's the real issue here.
Sure, it is. Big time.
The public has a right to know. When public monies are used, we have a right to know how those monies are used.
Absolutely.
That's the specific reason.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's it. But again, they're keeping it confidential with all of their agreements and all of it hush hush. That's why many times slush fund has been called the hush fund as well.
It's the same kind of incumbent protection racket that was associated with that Iwan Brothers House IT scandal. Now, there were a ton of Democrat congressmen in particular that were wrapped up in that House IT scandal, but nothing ever really happened. They got the A1 brothers got a slap on the wrist, and the serving congressman who had their data compromised, we never heard anything about it. Swept right under the rug.
In the article that I referenced moments ago on dealing with Congress properly here, you list a whole litany of perks there. And by the way, I'm going to put that article so that it's always relevant to you folks there. There's a new area of the platform on America Out Loud that you'll find on the navigation bar. And by the way, it's right under the front page on the nav. It's called Page 2 Happening. And on the things we reference on the radio here, you'll find there regularly. And this article will be there for you, this one that I just referenced that Stu wrote, because it's really good. It makes you think on dealing with Congress properly. And so there's a whole bunch of perks here, privileges, Stu, that you put out here, such as you've got here the Federal Employees Retirement Program. You've got, when a Congress dies in office, a member dies in office, the payouts to the family, but it goes on and on and on. I mean, you've got all kinds of benefits. I'm looking here, the Senate Hair Care Services provide a variety of grooming services and haircuts, manicures, things of that nature, gyms, dining rooms. Again, what did I say when I started this talk, Stu? I said prestigious. So I think a lot of them look at this stuff as perks. What's the most egregious thing on that list you have there that you think people should be aware of?
Oh, I'm not so sure that list is egregious. I think what the most egregious thing is that franking privilege business, which gets abused all the time. These things on this list is just
So these are just perks you think that are okay? These perks are okay?
I don't necessarily think they're okay. I'm just saying that over the years, a lot of these perks have accumulated for a variety of different reasons. There used to be more. There used to be this thing called a house bank and a house post office, and that was abused also.
That's right.
In fact, there were a couple of scandals associated with those back in the 80s that got a couple of congressmen fired eventually, fortunately. But the point is there are a lot of things that congressmen get on the side, so to speak. Ability to park in D.C., anywhere they want to park. They can schedule a whole bunch of concurrent flights to different places at the same time on the same day, which nobody can do essentially, and they only have to pay for one of them, so forth. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different little nitinoids like this that set them at a level that's different from the average
person. Well, and I want people to be aware of these perks. I think a lot of them are, there are multiple. You may find egregious out there, folks, but there's a list of these in that article here. And these are all kinds of, well again, like I said, Stu, these are part of that prestige of being a senator. And there's a whole lot of them, like, you know.
Right. I don't believe that list is exhaustive either.
Oh, no.
It's really just illustrative of the kinds of perks that senators and congressmen get.
Oh, yeah. You get preferential treatment from your hairdresser to your airline, to where you go, how you do it, and what happens. But again, that comes back to how we make this, and it's back to the argument you and I had just a bit ago about what did the framers really intend for Congress when we talked about what they, you know, what was the intention. And there are multiple ways to look at this. And of course, we're still looking at the end of the day, Stu, about human behavior here. This all comes back to really human behavior. What do we expect from people? Back to what the framers expected from the very, very beginning here. We know Congress is highly, highly dysfunctional. We know what we've determined on the show thus far, Stu, is on this program is we know that the core ideology is how they function. They don't function to make life better quality. We know that's, and everybody needs to take that from this program today and understand the purpose of Congress by their vision, by their mode, by their apparatus is that they're there to benefit themselves and to get win the next election, which is really what it's got to be, Stu. I mean, we can call it whatever we want, but I mean, that's where their effort is going. It's not talking about all these other things. And again, it becomes a bigger discussion, Stu, because then you've got, you know, we talk about should government even be involved in things like healthcare and education? And, you know, a lot of people think the education department should be banned up there and put away with forever. But, you know, and now they're arguing about paying for everybody's education and paying for all their health care. And I mean, it's a big movement in the country on that right now with the socialist movement, isn't it, Stu?
Well, think about it this way. You get a new congressman, goes to D.C. for the first time, has grandiose plans and grandiose ideas and what he wishes to achieve.
Mm-hmm.
Over time, you get corrupted by the process. You begin to spend more time in D.C. than you spend in your own district, and you listen to the D.C. Beltway media and other influences, and eventually you become tainted, not necessarily corrupted, although a lot of them do get corrupted, but they change over time. Mm-hmm. So solving our problems and doing what was originally intended to be done, it kind of falls by the wayside in terms of personal interests and personal motivations. And people are going to throw a lot of money at a congressman too. There are, you know, lobbyists and other folks are going to try to get him to go places and listen to pitches on various different legislation and so forth. So there's a natural corrupting influence that takes place all the time. And it's only human nature that people would tend to succumb to it over a period of time. That's another reason why we got to have term limits.
You know, I'm thinking, Stu, almost that I mean, do you think is there a possibility the framers fell short? Shouldn't they have foreseen this with human nature being what it is? Even back then, human nature was what it is. I mean, my point is, early on, had they put term limits in the program, had that been in the Constitution, had it already been in play, maybe potentially we'd be looking at something different today?
I don't think they ever envisioned a sitting political class that would be elected over and over and over again. Had they had the foresight to project that, I think they would have put term limit provisions in place. But I just don't think they foresaw that happening.
Interesting. That should make everybody ponder right there. I don't know. I think more than anything, the lessons of all of us with Congress, with the low approval ratings, obviously we the people are not happy with Congress. We haven't been happy with Congress in a very long time. It's not a Trump problem, wasn't an Obama problem specifically. It's been or a Bush problem. It's been a problem for a lot of years, people. I think the problem and who we need to hold guilty here, quite frankly, is we the people. I think the power is that, see, you out there are the boss. This is the lasting message I need to leave with you on this topic today, people. You're the boss out there. And I think that's where people, we got to get people to come together and to be able to understand what the fight is ahead. But then again, friends, you always have in the closet that ideology argument, that discussion of ideology. That's always in the room, keep in mind. And that's another question for another day. That I do want to accomplish with you, but you know, what do you really expect from your government? You know, and that's a fascinating conversation to me always, because that comes back to the human spirit. I just really find that totally intriguing. For myself, as a conservative, as a staunch conservative, I can tell you what I think I want from government. Not very much at all. I think if they can protect the national boundaries and keep us safe and stay the hell out of the way and let us do our thing and keep taxes very minimal to do those things, that would be a beautiful thing. Highly functional. And maybe we don't need all those characters in Congress. Maybe that's another thing. Or maybe, as Stu and I were saying, maybe the salary should be cut. I suggested maybe we cut it down to $50,000. Maybe we cut it down to $15 an hour for the sons of bitches. How's that? We talk about minimum wage. Let's give them minimum wage, $15 an hour. How's that? That's what we'll pay the politicians, and we'll give you a 40-hour week work, and you come up and serve and then go home. And we'll give you the prestige. We'll give you the gym and the dining room and the rest of the crap and the tickets on the airline. Just do your job and get out. You work for a couple of elections and then get on your way. So lots to think about, people. But I can tell you what, there's something's going to have to give, because it's highly, it's uncivilized and it's non-functional. And that means that all the things that you are wanting for your better life that you're paying for, it's not happening. It's simply not happening. So it always comes back to ourselves, isn't it now? We have to put out the right path, and we have to secure our own winnings in life, our own career, our own prosperity. You can't rely on government. Nobody should. Democrats shouldn't. Republicans shouldn't. Nobody should. Government is not the answer. They're the problem, you see. It's always been that way, friends. I'm afraid it's going to continue to be that way. It's time for term limits, though. It's time to get them out of office so those perks become less and less, and the prestige becomes less of a problem. They get in office, they serve. That's what the framers envisioned. God, I'll tell you what, it was an amazing theory. Let's get back to that program. Friends, it's time for you to vote them out of office once and for all, and to get involved and get loud.